Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Kate O'Connell, and we're going to be talking about Beyond the Imprint, a new modality for mental health practitioners. Beyond the Imprint, or BTI, heralds a new paradigm of thinking within the field of mental health counseling that is beyond the duality of our unconscious conditioning. Quantum physics is beginning to replace the mechanistic view of Newtonian physics and is teaching us with every new discovery that we are intimately interconnected with our environment and everything in it. This includes the understanding that we can change what is outside of us by simply changing ourselves. The goal of BTI is for the therapist to facilitate a safe, therapeutic experience in which the client is able to explore, identify, and dissolve imprinting at the cellular level that has distorted self-identity and informed dysfunctional behavior and relationship patterns throughout the course of their lifetime. Only then will the client be able to actualize their true self and increase their capacity to manifest what it is they truly desire. Kate O'Connell is a child and family therapist with a private practice in Charlottesville, Virginia, addressing the therapeutic needs of children, adolescents, adults, and families. Her training in intensive in-home services, addiction, family systems therapy, and energy medicine enables her to facilitate positive outcomes for her clients. Kate's book is available from Amazon.com, and I do have a direct link to her book there in the show page description, as well as you can find out more by visiting her website, O'ConnellKate.com, and about the nonprofit that she has, and that's HACVA.org, and we'll be talking more about that during the show. There are direct links to both websites in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Kate to the show. Good day, Kate.
Hey, how are you? Glad to be here.
Thank you. I'm happy to have you here and always happy to be able to talk about things that can make life easier for the listeners. And talking about the imprint and going beyond that is certainly one that can do that. So I usually like to have my guests give a little bit of a background, just for the listeners to kind of get an idea of like who they are and where they came from. So if you wouldn't mind sharing with the listeners just a little bit about your journey and how it is that you came to be working in the family therapy and the actually getting to the beyond the imprint part of that kind of work.
Great. Yeah. So I'm originally from Toronto. I grew up in Toronto and married with a young son in 1990, moved down to the United States in the area of Richmond. And then shortly after I separated from my husband in 1997, I moved up to the Adirondacks in upstate New York and began to study and train with a Cherokee medicine woman and shaman. And after doing that for a number of years, I had the awareness that I was really only able to access a small group of folks who would be seeking out healing at that level, the energetic level, as well as within the framework of Native American spirituality. So I was very strongly guided to sort of come down from the mountain, so to speak. And I went to Poughkeepsie and began my graduate degree in psychology, specializing in mental health counseling, and graduated in 2005 and then came back down to Virginia, only in Charlottesville, where I began my clinical training in intensive in-home services And then eventually that evolved into a private practice, which is what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, well, you know, I love that coming down from that, that aspect. And, you know, and I always find it fascinating when, you know, people like you have that metaphysical or that alternative experience, you know, and can work it in with, you know, quote, traditional kinds of approaches. You know, because like you said, I'm sure, you know, the idea of reaching more people, you know, more people are going to be comfortable with, you know, a traditional approach. But this kind of allows you to sneak in, you know, those medicine women, shamanistic perspectives, you know, and what life is and how it affects us.
Right. I've definitely become aware over the years that I bring a very holistic synthesis of all of my training, mental and energetic, to the experience of sitting with a client. And when I was starting out and I was working for agencies, I was very much focused on developing the clinical aspect of myself and the training involved in that. And then now that I'm in private practice, it's been sort of an expanding and evolving experience in which more and more in sitting with someone, I'm embodying all of what I've ever experienced in my own lifetime relative to my own imprinting. And then the training that I've experienced energetically and clinically and shamanically in my ability to actually help people have a very different experience from the one that they're having.
Yeah, I agree. So let's start with, first of all, I noticed in the beginning of the book you talk a little bit about epigenetics. And it seems like, you know, that has a basis or a part of what goes into the idea of beyond the imprint. And so would you mind sharing with the listeners exactly what that is, you know, and how it is that it fits into your methodology?
Sure. And, you know, the first thing I'd want to just name in response to that question is that there's been an ongoing debate in the field of psychology. They call it the nature versus nurture debate, to try to identify what has the most impact on the individual. Is it their genetic makeup or is it their environment? And so in the field of epigenetics, what we're discovering is that the environment is actually changing us at the cellular molecular level. It actually changes our DNA. And research has been done to show this very clearly, that when you take a sample of someone's DNA and you put it in a vacuum and you separate the donor from this sample, and then you provide stimulus to the individual and they have different emotional responses, then simultaneously what's being measured is that the DNA either contracts or expands according to whether the response is positive or negative. If the emotion is a loving, kind expression, or if it's a fearful, angry expression. And so we know that we are very deeply impacted by our environment, and it actually changes us at the molecular level. And then the research has taken it one step further to then introduce photons to the DNA, and photons being sort of a representative of the material world, something that we would typically, because of our conditioning, experience as separate from us and outside of us. When photons are introduced to the DNA, then photons, which are typically random, then now start to take the shape of the DNA. And so this starts to help us really truly understand, now that we're able to measure it and actually take images of it, is that we are absolutely not only impacted by our environment, but our response to the environment determines what shows up outside of us. And this is a central thesis of the modality.
Yeah, you know, I found, when I was in college many moons ago with psychology, you know, that nurture versus nature dilemma or discussion.
Right.
It was always, I mean, it was a constant, you know, and it's interesting because, you know, with this, you know, with the current studies that you mentioned and the effects of, you know, environment on DNA and the, what we're learning more about the quantum, you know, area, quantum mechanics, quantum physics. I mean, it's showing that they're certainly not exclusive of each other, and they're highly interactive with each other.
Yes, extremely interactive. So what I'm describing in the book is that we absolutely are genetically predisposed to manifest some physical, emotional, or mental disease expression, some expression of imbalance, given our genetic predisposition when we become stressed chronically or because of some catastrophic event or a series of catastrophic events that we would experience and then be impacted and encoded with in the 50 trillion cells of our body will result in these expressions at the physical, mental, or emotional level. Now, what I've come to understand is that in the present, when stimulus shows up in our environment that resonates with those imprints and triggers us and activates us, we actually have the ability to train ourselves to have a different response to the stimulus so that we don't reinforce the memory. And therefore, we then begin to change everything about our experience, including what symptomology we may be expressing.
Yeah, boy. I want to talk a little bit now about the well, first, I think we should probably explain what imprinting is, and, you know, so that the listeners kind of get an idea, you know, exactly what it is.
What we're talking about.
What we're talking about. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. So imprinting is memory. And everything that we've ever experienced from the moment of conception begins to imprint us. And at the moment of conception, we now take in at the cellular level in the 50 trillion cells of our body all the memory going back our respective DNA lineages. And recently, scientists in epigenetics have actually been able to identify this going back 14 generations. And in my opinion, we're just limited by our abilities to measure this, and I wouldn't stop at 14. At some point, we're actually going to recognize that it goes back forever. And so at the moment of conception, we take in at the cellular level, as we are developing as organisms, all of that memory, including trauma memory from our respective DNA lineages, which is what informs intergenerational patterns of behaviors and experiences. And then while we're developing in utero, we take in through the limbic brain, which is the first part of the brain to develop, which all it does is take in sensations at the deepest level. We now start to get a sense of the level of safety that we have relative to mom's stress levels and what's going on in the environment, in her environment. And so then we're born, and then we start to have those experiences as we develop and as we grow through childhood and adolescence, relative to what's being projected onto us that is anxious and fear-based, based on the parents' unresolved imprinting, as well as what's projected onto us. And then our own experiences that we have as we go out more and more into the world. And we're encoded in the 50 trillion cells of our body with all of that memory. The memory is not in the mind, it's actually in the body, and all the experts in trauma now are now in agreement and have known for some time that is why somatic-based and energy medicine-based interventions are the most effective for releasing trauma, because you can't talk your way out of it, you can't think your way out of it, you have to be working at very, very deep levels to be able to release all of this memory that's actually informing all of your limiting belief systems about yourself, about your environment, about your situations, about experiences you're having on a daily basis that are not what you truly desire, but you've essentially created as a result of what you're attracting to you from this memory that you're carrying within you.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I was reading, you know, the information about, you know, our memories and the 50 trillion cells and the maternal and paternal lineages, my first thought was, crap. It's like, I got to deal with all of that stuff. I mean, you know, it was interesting because, you know, and it does make sense, you know, as far as explaining familial patterns, you know, that occur over generations. So, but, you know, I thought, you know, I know I know a lot of the issues that both my mother and father had, and I'm like, okay, you know, I can see that, and I can see where maybe some of those, you know, seeped in. I mean, how I may be an expression of some of those. But I thought, you know, I don't even know, I'm sure, anywhere near all of their, you know, the imprints that they created, let alone 14 generations, or even going back, like you said, you know, infinitely. So, can you put some perspective for us who think, you know, that, you know, I've come into this world with all of this stuff, all of these, you know, encoded memories, imprints, and so should we really, is it when we go into work on ourselves, you know, to get our, you know, to, you know, align ourselves, be our true expression of self, is it really important then to just focus on those imprints that we see manifest in our life, you know, that we can kind of, that we can see consciously, or maybe even move from the unconscious to the conscious, that are affecting us?
So it's an excellent question, and it's not as complicated as people might think, is
okay.
What I've discovered.
Okay.
And
okay.
No, I know. I could feel you sweating on the other side of this phone call, so don't worry about it. I promise by the end of this conversation, people will feel like they've got a handle on this.
Okay,
so,
great.
And it speaks a lot to how this modality was created in the first place, because all I'm doing is just noticing what's showing up in the therapeutic venue relative to a small collective, but over a period of 7 years, enough of a collective that I could actually, you know, start to identify patterns and understand what works and what doesn't work. So we would start by identifying, one of the first things that I started to notice is that when people come into traditional therapy, typically what the experience is they come in and they start to tell their narrative. Everybody has a narrative, and the narrative usually has them reinforcing their sense of victimology in response to something that they experienced that was not desirable, and then may continue to be experiencing in their current relationships, either personal or professional. So there's usually a very common thread through these narratives in which, if, you know, the alcoholic husband stopped drinking, or the sociopathic boss stopped being a sociopath, then their life would be better. Or if the out-of-control teenagers started to show up according to their expectations, then life would be better and they would have what they needed to feel good about themselves. And that's the doorway in which we start to enter this modality, because the narrative comes from the unconscious imprinting. And the narrative is an expression of an awareness at a very deep level, not particularly conscious, that in the moment, in their current experience, their needs are not being met in the way that they would want them to be met, emotionally, physically, spiritually. And it always is coming from the imprinting from earlier stages of development in which their environment was not able to respond to their needs, emotional, spiritual, physical. And so it's kind of an overcompensation that's happening in the moment, in which people become very fixed on the other in their narrative that the other is responsible for them having the ex that they desire, and the reason they're not having it is because somebody's not showing up according to their expectations. all of this gets touched on in the chapter on the dualistic paradigm and understanding how very deeply we've been conditioned to believe that it's appropriate to expect other people are going to show up and make us feel better about ourselves. Now, the only time that that is ever appropriate is when we're very, very young and we're completely reliant on our caregivers to be able to care for us in meeting all of our needs. And to the degree that that didn't happen, that for the most part we may not even remember because it was happening at such young ages before we were ever able to process it because our brains hadn't developed that much. But nevertheless, the memories are still being carried in the 50 trillion cells of our body. So what we start to do is we start to drop the narrative, and we just start to, I train people to get out of their heads and to start feeling what it is they don't want to feel. And it's very simple. It will always be a fear, anxiety response to what's showing up. And then, you know, that takes us deeper into the modality in terms of how to get beyond the imprint.
Okay. So one of the things that when I was reading, it was, you were talking about, you know, well, and you just mentioned some of these imprints may be unconscious. You know, we may not even remember the source or the reason for that memory or imprint. What can we do to, is it the recognition of that emotion of fear or anxiety, you know, is that the going to be the signal that there is an imprint to be looked at, you know, to bring it from the unconscious to the conscious realm?
Great question. So the example that I use is probably the most common that people will experience in their day-to-day, particularly I'm speaking to New York City, right? Right now?
Uh-huh.
You're in New York City, yes?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I'm actually in South Carolina, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But, yeah.
I thought this was
no, that's
New
okay.
York,
I know it's just the, I know it's the crazy setup that I have here on this platform. it comes through as New York, and people dial in San Diego. So, but I'm in South Carolina.
Okay. So anybody living in a large metropolis would appreciate this example: is that when you're in traffic and somebody cuts you off, you're typically, and we're seeing it more and more, it's on the news every day, in which there's extreme reactivity to what's actually occurring.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's actually happening in that moment is you being cut off in traffic, that stimulus is touching in on a memory that you're carrying within you in which your safety was compromised at another time when you were probably much younger. Doesn't have to be traffic oriented. It's just in general in which you did not feel safe. And then what's happening in response to that stimulus being touched in on is your adrenals become activated. So I actually, in training people how to do this, which is essentially creating space between the stimulus and the response so you can have a more neutral response, I ask them to start to notice when their adrenals become activated, which is when you go into the fight or flight response, which is when the extreme reactivity comes up. And then if you're not yet able to identify when your adrenals become activated, because most people are chronically activated in their adrenals,
right.
They live a stressful life, so that may be difficult to discern initially, then what you want to do is you want to notice the moment in which you then defend yourself in response to that activation, which would be the extreme reactivity, the middle finger up in the air, the shouting at the top of your lungs, the shaking your fist, the deciding that you're going to drive up really close to them and let them know that they just did something really stupid that scared you. But the bottom line is this is just a great example for people to understand that this is not the only example in which something is going to be showing up in their environment that as a stimulus that will trigger a memory of another time in earlier stages of development when they felt overwhelmed and their safety was compromised. It could be a shutoff notice from the electric company. And
yeah.
So you know, what happens in those moments is everybody goes into survival mode. And in
right.
survival mode, Yes, and so when you have this reaction in response to being triggered and therefore being in survival mode, when you react in that way, you actually reinforce the imprint. You reinforce the memory. Think of that memory as like a groove in a vinyl record. It just gets deeper and deeper and deeper. And you're going to know people in life who typically have very intense, stressful lives that seem to just be drawing these experiences to them constantly. And that is in fact true, because as long as this imprinting is there, you now have a vibrational frequency. If anybody's ever read or learned anything about the law of attraction that's being talked a lot about in quantum physics, is all that does is that sets you up to be in resonance with these kinds of experiences. So you're actually drawing them towards you. You can actually then become sort of the architect of your own experience in your own life by becoming aware of what you're at the effect of unconsciously relative to this imprinting. And then through training yourself not to respond in the ways that you've unconsciously responded and reacted, you can actually change everything at the cellular level and therefore change what's outside of you.
Yeah, so that is the idea of being able to change, to alter life at that cellular level, to me, is what I think is really what should encourage people, to recognize that by changing their reactions, to those stimuli, and not continuing the pattern, is kind of filling in the groove, you're making it less groovy, so to speak, as far as the way that the patterns are working.
Right, and you can actually dissolve these imprints by changing your response and also working within the framework of energy medicine and the modalities that are being offered there to actually release the memory. You can release these imprints at the cellular level. And what you'll also probably know, and a lot of your listeners will know if they start thinking about it, is they're going to know friends, family members, colleagues who just seem to be very addicted to drama. And it does start to become like an addiction, because what I've learned over the years, particularly when I was doing intensive in-home services with underserved populations where the children were very much at risk, is that in the absence of the stimulus that was happening in these environments on a regular basis that were very unsafe for the children and very, we're talking about abusive and neglectful environments, is that in the absence of the stimulus, I was watching children's anxiety go through the roof, because it became so chronic in their experience that it was being anticipated all of the time. Their adrenals were constantly on, and there was a huge part of them that was sort of hyper-vigilant to anticipating when the next blow came, mm-hmm. literally, figuratively. And so they would actually sort of, like, if one of the parents was the abuser, they would actually get in that parent's face in order to just bring it on, the stimulus, faster, in order to get it over with, because sitting with the anxiety was just too overwhelming. And so over the years, now in private practice, just working with people who've had just unimaginable trauma and chronic stress, I start to notice that their patterns of behavior are somewhat similar, in which if there's too much time that goes by where everything is calm, they'll actually kind of, without realizing it, create a conflict in their life or a drama in order to be able to cycle through it and allow the adrenals to become activated in response. Because in the absence of it, the anxiety will go through the roof, because calm is just the waiting for the next storm for people who've been chronically abused or traumatized or stressed. And so a big part of what we do in the work that I do with clients is to support the physical body, particularly the adrenals, And when you do that, then that actually starts to take that pattern away. That actually starts to help dissolve that pattern of the need to have the adrenals activated. So adrenal support, valerian, liquid valerian root is just profound at treating the nervous system at the deepest levels. And I believe that this country is a collective of, you know, adrenal fatigue just because of our conditioning. So there's a lot of people that I know, including myself, who have benefited tremendously from becoming more experienced in how to support the body nutritionally.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when you were talking about the addiction to drama, there's I have a family friend who her life, I mean, it is literally nothing but drama. I mean, it's, you know, when she calls my friend, I mean, it's constantly all of the angst and conflict and negativity,
yep,
and division, all of that. I mean, and it's, and my friend gets, you know, gets tiring, you know, to hear that, you
it's
know,
exhausting.
Let alone
it's
experience
exhausting.
It.
Right. It's exhausting. And it's not uncommon. And, you know, from where I sit, because of what I've come to understand, that's just an indicator of just how deeply traumatized this individual has been. And that unconsciously, what's actually happening, which is really fascinating, is in revisiting the trauma scenarios, it's an unconscious attempt to resolve the original trauma.
Okay. Interesting. Because, my friend, this woman had probably now almost 15, 20 years ago, had a daughter who disappeared and, you know, was murdered. And I mean, it's just been, you know, that's been her life since then. But, you know, in addition to that, then every other family member, and like you say, it's like she's attracting things for her to, you know, become overly concerned about. Yeah, to revisit. Yeah. And a lot of it, you know, doesn't go back to that initial trauma or the really the one that, you know, I believe kind of, you know, catapulted her, you know, on that path, you know.
Right.
So, and, you know, as long as that's, as long as that's unresolved, I mean, it seems like, you know, she's going to continue down that path.
Yeah, the word I use is shattered. When we were talking about that level of trauma, there's a shattering that occurs.
Mm.
And it's very interesting because what I've come to understand is in that moment, regardless of whether it's that level and that degree of trauma, something unimaginable for anybody that's never experienced it, is that at that moment, that memory becomes flash frozen, as does all trauma memories, in the frequency of fear. Like it's flash frozen. It is being held in a virtual space and time, that who she was before that happened ceased to exist. And as a result of that experience becoming flash frozen at that particular time and space, that it determined everything that would unfold after that. And it's an attempt, like I said, unconsciously to sort of integrate that piece shamanically. We can speak to it shamanically, is actually seen in the shamanic world as having split off. And that when you go and you have soul retrieval with a shaman, what's actually happening is they're calling back these pieces that have split off in response to horrific trauma and integrating it into the physical body. Now, the clinical world also has language to speak to that, the integrating aspects of the self that have been split off in response to unimaginable trauma. And in the absence of anybody sitting with her and doing that level of intervention, she will continue to cycle through these patterns that you described.
Yeah, yeah, I see that too. Well, we're just past halfway through the show, Kate, so I want to take just a quick break and invite listeners, if you would like to call in and ask Kate any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to type them in and we'll get to them. Now, when we come back from break, Kate, I want to talk a little bit more about the trauma. And, you know, you talk in your book about an energetic charge, you know, that's kind of associated. So I kind of want to just, you know, talk a little bit about that, because I thought that was, you know, that's a good visual for people to, you know, to kind of hold when it comes time to understanding what this is all about. Okay?
Perfect.
Great. Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there, or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc., and we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide: books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. There is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Kate O'Connell, and we're talking about her new book, Beyond the Imprint, A New Modality for Mental Health Practitioners, and those seeking their help. You can find her book, which is available at Amazon. I do have a direct link in the show page description to her book there. And you can also find out more about Kate by visiting her website, which is O'ConnellKate.com. There's a link to that in the description, as well as a link to her nonprofit organization, the Healing Alliance of Central Virginia. And that particular website is www.hacva.org. Again, links to all of those are in the show page description. Okay, so that we're back, Kate.
Yes, glad to be
great.
Back.
Okay, so now trauma. Now, I mean, we were discussing some of the, you know, major, you know, trauma events, you know, and some of the dramatic side. But it was interesting in your book when I read it about the fact that, you know, trauma. We all really have a bit of trauma in our life that we even if it's minimal, we do have it, and not to forget all of those, you know, infinite lineages that we have in our DNA.
Right. And the interesting thing is, you know, I do write in my book on the chapter on trauma that prior to doing this work, I, like probably most of the listeners out there, would have assumed, and I did assume, that trauma was pretty much limited to soldiers and first responders and people that were being exposed to very horrific experiences. But that, in fact, is not true, because what we come to understand is that from the moment we're born and we're young children growing up, that when our schemas aren't fully developed and our brains aren't fully developed and we're not able to really process things in a way that we are as adults to make rational sense of what's occurring, then what might seem pretty benign to an adult observer can actually be very traumatic to a young child.
Yeah, exactly, because the child doesn't have the process, the reasoning processes, and the perspective yet to be able to recognize events as they truly are.
Right. The lack of perspective,
yeah,
and the fact that the brain's not as developed, they aren't really feeling it is being processed through the limbic brain through the sensations, the sensory aspect of the self. And all it would mean is that the child felt overwhelmed. So it could be something that people are observing and it doesn't even meet their level of concern, because it could look like a child playing with an older child and it's just a little bit of rough play. But, you know, some awful trauma happens to kids in those situations, you know, an older sibling, you know, wrestling with them and them not being able to breathe and, oh, wait, maybe that's an imprint of mine coming to the surface.
It's amazing when we start talking. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it is. But that's true for all of us. So, we have a tendency to suppress what it is we feel, because the feeling in response to the experience is also overwhelming. And children don't have a problem expressing how they feel, but we get lots of experiences to watch how they are conditioned in very non-judgmental ways to sort of not express how they're feeling, particularly if they're in public.
Yeah, exactly. Now, as I mentioned before the break, you know, when in your book, when you were talking in the section about trauma, you indicated that you talked about responses creating an energetic charge, and you know you kind of have to deal with that, or it could lead to a cellular imprint. So, can you talk a little bit about the idea of an energetic charge and how it relates to imprinting?
Right. Stephen Levine is one of the world's experts on trauma. And he wrote a book called Waking the Tiger. And he talks about this idea in his book, in the fact that in response to the trauma, there's what's called the immobilization response. And the immobilization response is the experience of there being an energetic charge in the moment within the individual in response to what's happening outside of them that is potentially life-threatening, that has their survival hanging in the balance according to their perception. And none of that gets played out at the mental level. Again, we're in the body, it's somatic, and it's because of where we are in history. And one of the ways to describe this would be to go back and talk about what it was like in tribal times, when, you know, the threat that would come through the camp or the village would be infrequent, and when it came through, it would be, you know, it wouldn't be extensive. So the Siberian tiger walking through the village people would either flee or they would confront it. There would be somebody that would confront it, but regardless of what happened, it would happen quickly. And then the nervous system would it be able to regulate fairly quickly after the threat has been diminished or destroyed. So in modern times, in living in these very, very busy, very stressful lives that we've created for ourselves, there isn't a whole lot of time for the nervous system to deal with the threat and then be able to resolve itself and come into equilibrium, because usually there's something else right after that. So, you know, it's because I'm always going to be talking about this in terms of a significant trauma or chronic stress, because that pretty much covers everybody. So in the immobilization response, in which the left brain shuts down and speech can become slurred and memory then that's at that point that people are not able to actually recall what happened to them. And also I'm thinking of other experiences that they have where it feels like everything's happening in slow motion. These are all perceptual evidence of the fact that you are now in an immobilization response. And there's an energetic charge and we're back to that explanation I gave earlier about the memory being recorded at the cellular level in the frequency of fear, that it's recorded with that charge actually at that moment creates the imprint at the cellular level. And so when I'm sitting with people, I will sometimes, just in, you know, naming certain things, I will, if I'm trying to get a sense of the age in which they were traumatized and how big a trauma we were talking about, is I will purposely stress them, and then that aspect of them shows up because there's an emotional component to it, and as well as the energetic charge. And so that gives me a sense of what age the individual experienced the most significant trauma, as well as the degree that, you know, that the trauma impacted them. And so we're back to dissolving the imprint through these modalities that I describe in the book, that dissolves the charge. And what a lot of what I've learned over the years that I actually do that helped inform this modality is based on what my clients reflect back to me is their experience of working with me. And one of the descriptions that was given to me is that I actually hold the charge. And that is actually a very shamanic description, that when I'm sitting with a client, that in working with the identifying of what the actual imprint is, which isn't necessarily discussed in complete sentences, I'm just trying to get a sense of what this person has been imprinted with, that in doing so, that I'm actually sort of in the moment holding that charge on their behalf. And in so doing, then they have an opportunity to sort of distance themselves from it. And, you know, we move forward from there, working with the energy and working with the flower essences that I utilize. It is a difficult experience to articulate because even as I'm talking about it, I realized I just kind of exited left stage clinical framework, just kind of went into the shamanic framework that comes into play a lot with the work that I do.
Well, you know, and I love that exit. I mean, that was a great one. You know, because, you know, especially when you're talking about generational, you know,
yes,
trauma and imprinting and that kind of thing, to me it would seem that, you know, that shamanic perspective and work would be very effective, you know, in working with that kind of issue.
Right, because it, first of all, it helps. What it actually does is it just widens my perspective at the non-mental level. Like I have the ability to hold a very wide space for the individual, and that's actually a mantra that I use a lot with clients. Is I ask them to just keep going wide, and depending on how that directive hits them, sort of, or affects them, gives me a whole lot of indication as to how deeply their conditioning is that has them not feeling safe unless they are able to participate in that conditioning and be very guarded and defensive in response to what's going on in their life. So, you know, one of the most important chapters for people to read is on the dualistic paradigm, because nobody, and that was myself included until I did become aware, nobody is aware of all of what they've been conditioned to believe about themselves and reality until they actually start to understand it. And then once you start to sort of take people beyond their conditioning, which is counterintuitive because it's how they've been conditioned, but, you
right,
know, we're now talking about what happens when any spiritual seeker sits with a high frequency teacher, spiritual teacher, is that when you start to listen to the questions that are being asked in a group setting, what you start to recognize is that everybody's asking for the same thing. Everybody is asking for freedom. People want to have the experience of being free. And that's essentially what this modality is helping people do, is to get beyond their conditioning so that they can actually experience the freedom of knowing who they are and what their full capacity is to express who they are in this physical body, in this dimension. And the only thing that's getting in the way of that is their conditioning. But people don't let go of it that easily, that quickly. because it's what they've been relying on to keep themselves feeling safe and secure.
Yeah, it makes sense. Now, when you're talking about conditioning, one of the things that seemed to be a central term throughout when I was looking at the application of the process with, you know, childhood and adolescence, what popped up a lot was conformity and
yes.
conforming. So one of the things that, you know, it seems that from elementary school on, you know, being, you know, conforming to the rules and regulations seemed to be, you know, paramount in the educational system. So is conformity, can that be interchanged with conditioning?
Yeah, absolutely. And
okay.
Excellent. Just an insight, because that's exactly what's happening, is now the child goes into a much wider, much larger environment that's not going to feel as safe as the environment that they've become accustomed to and that they've relied on to infer future probabilities, because now there's other people who are not mom and dad and siblings and more people, so more unknowns. And in order to survive that environment, then it becomes very clear that they have to show up according to the expectations of the people who are in that environment and to conform to the expectations. And so children are pretty compliant with that. And what happens is at the age of 12, something called metacognition kicks in. And that essentially is thinking about thinking. And that's when children become much more introspective. It's when they start to notice, you know, social injustices. It's when they start to recognize that not everybody that is going to sleep at night has a full stomach, that there's actually, you know, a disparity of wealth, and this is where they start to become young little activists. And it's also when they start to call everybody on everything that they've been conditioned by. This is where they parents, you don't know what you're talking about, and I know more than you do, and I'm going to solve, you know, the world hunger problem. And so developmentally, this is absolutely appropriate, because in order for them to become successful in adulthood, they have to be able to differentiate from everything that they have been in relationship with and conditioned by. But typically what will happen is that parents now, through their unresolved imprinting in attempting to parent their child, will ratchet up the control mechanisms that have been used in the past to discourage negative behavior and unwanted behavior and elicit more positive behaviors. And what ends up happening is that these control mechanisms don't work in adolescence, and they actually end up creating the very experiences with the adolescent that the parent is trying to avoid, because conformity to an adolescent is the equivalent of death. And so adolescents, before they'll conform to these mechanisms.
Yeah, and we're seeing a lot of that, unfortunately. So, Well, Kate, this has really been fascinating. We're toward the end of the show. So is there, for the listeners out there, what do you hope that the reader will get, you know, from reading your book? And I loved it, so I'm one of those that I'm in those, you know, seeking their help category, you know, that is a subtitle. But, you know, who would be really a good target, you know, for reading the book?
So I believe everyone would, and I'm basing what I'm saying on all the feedback that I've gotten. So I'll name a couple of things that I found very striking, which I wouldn't know was true if people weren't consistently reflecting this back to me, which is that this book is written in such a way that it is accessible to everyone. I have 16-year-olds reading this book and learning from it and getting excited from it. And so I don't want people to be put off by the fact that it's been written about a clinical topic by a clinician, because it is absolutely accessible to everyone. And that there is actually a way for you to get beyond your imprinting, and it's described in the book. And there will be a companion piece to that, this book, which is going to be the didactic piece, much smaller, but it will actually be teaching people how to do this. because a big part of how this is going to evolve is I'm going to start training therapists how to do this. But the one thing that I see it as the greatest need that exists right now is to understand that 90% of therapists will refuse to work with adolescents, and it's because their unresolved stuff is getting touched in on not demographic to work with, because they tend to really call you on your stuff. So you have to be very comfortable with you who you are to work with them. So this modality, if it were used exclusively as an intervention with adolescents, it will change everything, because these kids are hungry for this information, because they get it. When I share this with them, and I've been working with adolescents, or it's the majority of my clientele for 8 years now, coming up on 8 years, and they are changing very quickly, and because they're hungry and because this speaks to their experience. And so that's the one that I would want to share with everybody, that there is hope, and I believe that this is it.
Yeah, I agree. I enjoyed it. It got me thinking in a lot of areas. So, well, Kate, I really enjoyed our conversation today. I really wanted to thank you for your time and insight.
Thank you. It was really enjoyable. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Again, everyone, today my very special guest, Kate. We've been talking about her book and process, Beyond the Imprint. It's for mental health, a new modality for mental health practitioners and those seeking their help. Again, the book is available through Amazon.com, and I do have a direct link to her book there in the show page description, as well as you can find out more about Kate by visiting her website, which is www.oconnellkate.com, and you can find out also about her organization, the Healing Alliance of Central Virginia, and links to both of those websites is also in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show, and until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's BITERADIO.ME. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.